From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Society needs well-educated young people to fill the public service jobs that make our communities better. But it's hard to make a living at those jobs with a boatload of federal loans on your back. That's why Congress passed a law that says if you serve the public and make your loan payments for 10 years, the federal government will forgive whatever you still owe. It makes perfect sense, right? Well, it hasn't quite worked out that way. This hour on Point, how the government's public service debt forgiveness program became a nightmare of red tape and broken promises. You can join us. Did you sign up for the public service debt forgiveness program? What's your story? Is this a program we need? And there's always that big picture question, should the government be involved in the business of student loans at all? Do we need to fix programs like this or possibly get rid of them? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me now from New York is Ryan Liebenthal, freelance writer and editor. Her story for Mother Jones, her new story for Mother Jones, which is online today, is entitled Unforgivable. Why is the nation's flagship debt forgiveness program failing the students it's supposed to help? We've got a link to it at onpointradio.org. Ryan Liebenthal, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, I mean, whenever we talk about student loans and federal government programs, things can get very complicated. So I just want to spend a minute here sort of having you help us lay out the background here so we're all on the same page. When we're talking about public student loan forgiveness, public service loan forgiveness, I should say. I'm already getting the names confused. What exactly do we mean? How old is this program and what is it designed to achieve?
So the program was passed as part of a broader legislation in 2007. And it was really, I think, a way of trying to incentivize people to go into particular professions that were of high need and that are hard to do in part because wages are fairly low in the public sector and in nonprofits.
Yeah, and like, so you're talking like public defenders,
human rights workers,
rural doctors.
Right, exactly. Okay. Social workers, that kind of thing, teachers. And so, you know, on the other hand, those professions very often require, at the very least, a bachelor's degree, often a master's degree, and that can get very expensive. And so if we're going to have people in these professions, which I think many people would agree are necessary, you know, there has to be some kind of way to balance those.
Yeah. So, I mean, the simple equation is how do you get someone who maybe has $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in student loans to stay in a job that may not pay enough to help them pay off those loans?
Right. And if we're talking about lawyers, you know, they have other options. It's not just like you get a law degree and the only thing you can do is become a public defender. So there has to be some way to kind of funnel people into these jobs that they want to do. I think a lot of people really want to do service, but it's just very hard to balance.
And the point about lawyers and doctors, too, we'll circle back to that because those are the two professions that people keep bringing up as sort of one of the pushbacks against the existence of this program to begin with. Mm-hmm. But so what's the problem here, right? I mean, the idea is that, you know, qualifying borrowers would be in this program for 10 years. They'd make all their payments for 10 years. And then whatever they owe at the end of 10 years would be forgiven by the government. So what's the problem?
Well, I think there's a few different problems. I think it's a very well-intentioned program that's kind of gone off the rails. And basically the various factors there are any kind of policy like this is very complicated. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of hoops to jump through just in order to qualify. And on top of that, there was not a whole lot of outreach initially. And even for many years about how you could qualify, what you had to do, that the program even existed, people had a hard time finding these things out. You had to be very proactive about it. And then on top of that, to manage this, there's a system of private contractors. And I think that there you get into some actual negligence and kind of incompetence and mislaid priorities, basically.
Okay, so let's sort of drill down with the with the private contractors here, you're, mm-hmm. you're talking about those who are servicing the loans, right?
Right?
I mean,
yes.
I think whether or not people are in the public service loan forgiveness program or not, the loan services are something that maybe millions of Americans are familiar with.
Yes.
You report that in 2012, all of these public service loans, though, the federal government gave to one servicing company, FedLoan. Tell us a little bit about them.
So FedLoan is a kind of offshoot of a Pennsylvania agency called the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency that was created in the 1960s at a time when states and the federal government were really working to promote access to higher education. And over the years, that agency had a very specific function within the federal loan program. And over the years, they kind of branched out into other business ventures. So FedLoan was created at the time that the federal government was moving all federal loans into what's called the direct loan program. Prior to that, private banks gave out the loans, mm-hmm. and agencies like FHIA, the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, guaranteed the loans, made sure that they would be paid back. And in 2008, at the time of the financial crisis, the government, the Department of Education, essentially nationalized the student loan program. So now the federal government makes all federal loans directly. And it didn't really have the capacity to deal with the day-to-day work of, you know, collecting the money, dealing with borrowers when they have issues. And so that was all outsourced to these private companies.
Right. And now FedLoan, as you report, is servicing, what, one-third of student debt, for federal
yeah.
student debt in this country?
Right, right, which is a huge amount of money. And in 2012, what happened is, so before the program has been around since 2007, but until 2012, there was kind of no way to be sure that you were in it, that you were doing anything to advance yourself toward forgiveness. And in 2012, the government gave the exclusive contract for dealing with these specific loans to FedLoan. After that point, there was a form that you could fill out with your employment information. Someone at your employer signed it to verify that you worked there. You sent it in. It went to FedLoan, and they determined whether you qualified, whether your employment qualified. And if it did, your loans, if they were serviced by someone else, just were automatically transferred to FedLoan.
Okay. But in 2017, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau put out a scathing report after receiving many complaints from people whose loans were being serviced by FedLoan that kind of almost inexplicable things were happening, like their loans mm-hmm. were being put into forbearance without them knowing it. And then especially for people in the public service loan forgiveness program, that was a problem because their payments weren't going towards the, sort of that 10-year requirement for them. What were some of the other issues that have come up with how FedLoan is servicing these loans?
Well, the forbearance one is a big one. I should also say that the servicer problem is pretty universal.
Right.
So it's not just like FedLoan is the only company that's doing this. And basically what was happening is a lot of people were getting bad information. They would call and they would ask, am I in this program? And they would be told yes, but then it would turn out years later, and then they didn't know they needed to do anything else. And years later, once they finally turned in a form or something, they would find it, oh, actually, you had the wrong kind of loan, or you weren't in the right repayment program. And so none of those payments qualified, and you have to just start over from zero. So there are basically a lot of kind of customer service and administrative type problems. And the forbearance one is a really big one because it's a situation, I think, where it's easier to put someone into forbearance than to figure out what their actual solution would be. And when you're in forbearance, you're not making payments or, you know, you're maybe not making enough to qualify. So you're just stalled.
I see. Now, I mean, so this raises a question about, there's so many, but You know, you raise a point in your report, which I just want to explore a little bit, that the critics of not necessarily the program, but Fed loans, for Fed loans handling of it, their servicing of these loans, is that when we think about the federal government's role in the issue of student debt, I mean, you've spoken to people who say you have to understand that the borrowers aren't the customers, that the borrowers are the product here, right? Mm-hmm. And that from a certain perspective, it's in Fed loans' best interest to keep borrowers paying for as long as possible, because if those loans do get forgiven, they're no longer customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was something I posed to various people, and, you know, I'm not sure that's almost to the point of a conspiracy theory that they're really acting to hobble people's forgiveness. But I do think that there's not a whole lot of incentive to, you know, there's a payment scheme by the federal government where these servicers get a certain amount of money every month per loan, and it's along a sliding scale. Based on what state the loan is in. And so for about 5 years, the servicer actually made more money per month if a loan was in forbearance than if it was delinquent. And so it wasn't really in their interest monetarily to spend a lot of time on the phone explaining how to get into a better repayment program when you could just push a button and the person is in forbearance.
Yeah. Well, we are talking about this thorny issue of public service loan forgiveness. It's a federal government plan that would allow people in certain jobs, in certain public service jobs, to pay their student loans for 10 years. And if they qualify, then have their loan forgiven after the end of those 10 years. It's perhaps a good idea on the face of it, but the execution of this plan is caused some significant problems. We'll explore them more when we come back. We're speaking with Ryan Liebenthal. She's written about this for Mother Jones. We have a link to her article at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. That's a federal government program. And also about the bigger question about whether or not or how the federal government ought to be in the business of student loans and student debt. I'm speaking with Ryan Liebenthal. She's a freelance writer and editor. She's got a big piece in Mother Jones. It's titled Unforgivable: Why Is the Nation's Flagship Debt Forgiveness Program Failing the Students It's Supposed to Help? And we've already got some really interesting comments. This coming into our website, onpointradio.org, someone calling themselves Brad Dude says, "Unfortunately, even taking a Parent Plus loan for my son, who has been a police officer for more than 8 years, and making payments on time for more than 12 years, doesn't count for loan forgiveness because the loan is in my name, not his." Really interesting. Ryan, for your article, you talked to a woman named Lee McIlvain in Portland, Oregon.
Right.
And I actually spoke to her over the weekend as well, because her story was really compelling. And she told us, she told me, just as she told you, of all the challenges that her loan has encountered since Fed loans started servicing it. And here's one of them. You mentioned them a little earlier, but here's Lee describing a catch-22 regarding the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, if there ever was one.
You only find out if the payments that you are making qualify after you submit your employment certification form. So you have to be in a qualifying job before they will tell you if the job is qualifying. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't to me.
Ryan, can you just explain this to us once again? It sounds completely backwards. How does that work?
Right. Well, that's an interesting point, that if this program was meant to incentivize people to go into a particular kind of employment and they don't know if they're actually qualifying, it's very difficult to square that. But basically, so let's say you work at a 501c3 nonprofit. That should qualify. So you should know right away that that's a qualifying employer. But if you work at a different kind of nonprofit, let's say a 501c6 or something, you don't necessarily know if it qualifies because the government determines that on a case-by-case basis. So you start working. You are making payments through a repayment plan that qualifies, hopefully. You have the right kind of loans. You submit a form, and then you're told after the fact if your employer qualified, if your payments qualified, and you get a number that you've, you know, number of payments that are being counted. And you're encouraged to submit that form once a year so that you can track your progress. Mm. But one of the interesting things that's come up recently is that some of those qualifications that were initially made, and they're made by FedLoan itself, kind of acting apparently on behalf of the government. Well, recently, some of those have been reneged. So people who work, for instance, at the American Bar Association, which is not a normal 501c3 nonprofit, had been told their employment qualified. And then at some point, the FedLoan said, oh, whoops, it doesn't. Uh-huh. And the federal government has argued, well, FedLoan was actually never qualified to make those assessments in the first place. And the only way you can know for sure that your employment qualifies, that you qualify for this forgiveness, is after you have submitted your final application for forgiveness and you receive forgiveness. So the only way you know you qualify for forgiveness is by being forgiven.
So you'll only know for sure, under ideal circumstances, after 10 years.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So that's a big commitment to make in total uncertainty with huge consequences financially and, you know, in terms of your life choices.
Well, so that explains, in fact, you sort of presaged a question I was going to ask you here because, you know, under ideal circumstances, I mean, for Lee McIlvaine, who we just heard from a second ago, mm-hmm. I mean, she in the next couple of years will reach that 10-year horizon for her payments. And I asked her, I said, you know, when you hit that 10-year mark, if your loan gets forgiven, what's the big deal? I mean, she has a $70,000 debt. She says she's paid almost that much, mostly in interest anyway. So I was like, mm-hmm. what's the big deal? What's the problem? The program will have worked. But you're just saying that a lot of people might reach that point and not know for sure whether or not they're getting forgiven.
Right. And I think it is, it's worth saying, you know, and Lee said this to me and other people have said this, it is still worth it for them. If they get forgiven, they're definitely happy about that. But I think the fact that people are operating under levels of really stressful uncertainty and they're dealing with situations where their count doesn't match with the company's count. They face really often kind of bad customer service situations, and they just have no sense of whether this is going to work out. Yeah. I think another thing to say is that, you know, politically there has been an attempt to get rid of this program, so people are really worried about that.
Right. Now, the Trump administration has signaled that it wants to get rid of the program. Stand by here just for a second, Ryan, because I want to take a quick call and then bring in another guest here. Richard is calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on the air, Richard.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. This is very opportune because I'm in the process of writing about this right now. I'm a retiree. I live on Social Security, and I'm an adjunct professor. What happens, and I have private loans, and I have some Fed loans. What happens with the loan forgiveness, and it could be 10 years, but in the college industry, what we are frequently adjunct professors where we can only teach 27.5 hours per semester, which means we are not considered then full-time professors. Therefore, we might be paying back for 10 years, but because we're not considered full-time professors, we are we don't get any credit for paying back for so long. Also, the private loan industry is such a group of predators. It's just incredible to work with them. They are outrageous, and They're just interested in, they'll get money as far as much as they can get.
Yeah, well, Richard, thank you so much for your call. I want to get another voice in here, someone who works a lot with people who are wrestling with their federal student loans. Adam Minsky, he is a lawyer, practices in New York and Massachusetts, and he helps student loan borrowers and their families with disputes with lenders and guides them through the process of borrowing for college in general. Adam Minsky, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I just want to get straight down to a very basic question
here.
Sure. You've worked with a lot of students and families. In your view, is the problem simply the way in which this public service loan forgiveness program is serviced, right? And that maybe like we could just fix what's happening at FedLoan, for example. Or is the problem with the program itself? Where is it that we should be focusing our attention?
I think it's all of the above. The way I see it, there are essentially three components of the problem. There's the complexity of the program itself, as it was written when the law was passed about a decade ago. It's not just that you have federal loans and that you're working in public service. You have to have the right type of federal loan. You have to have the right type of repayment plan. And as we were just talking about, you have to have the right type of employment. And if any one of those components are missing, you could think you're doing everything right, but you're not. So that's number one. Number two, the servicing system, as we've heard, is a disaster. People aren't being informed about these requirements. There are misrepresentations made, and there are mistakes made by the Department of Ed's contractors. And then the third element of it is the Department of Education's oversight of those contractors. There practically is none, and there is no accountability. And so these three components, I think, come together and create a perfect storm of a disaster.
There's no accountability, really?
Not really. I mean, you know, we were having some accountability with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's oversight.
Yeah, that report they released last year was scathing.
Exactly.
To say the least.
And that has, you know, the department that was overseeing that has largely been effectively dismantled. And under the current administration, the Department of Education has rescinded policy memos and guidance that were supposed to create at least some incentives for servicers to improve what they were doing with student loan borrowers. And those are gone.
Well, and also today we have this news that Seth Frotman, who until today was the student loan ombud at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, he has resigned, right? And he sent a letter to Mick Mulvaney, the bureau's acting director, saying that the current leadership, quote, has turned its back on young people and their financial futures. So where does that leave CFPB as an oversight body for student loans?
That's an excellent question. I think it the CFPB was probably the most important government body that had a say in how the student loan system, including the public service loan program, was being run. And with that program or with that agency, you know, being, again, essentially dismantled, I don't think there is an oversight body at the federal level that is enforcing this. And so what we're seeing now are states stepping in. You know, here in Massachusetts, for instance, the state attorney general filed a lawsuit against FedLoan for a lot of the problems associated with the public service loan forgiveness program, and other states' attorney generals have been stepping in as well to kind of try to enforce state law and protect state residents from these types of behaviors.
Ryan Liebenthal, you want to jump in here with a thought on this?
I think Adam speaks to a lot of the serious points here. I would say I've looked at some of those CFPB complaints. You can download the complaints people have made directly to the CFPB website. And it's just harrowing. And to think that, you know, there won't be this kind of bulldog branch of the government to help people and that the federal government is more interested in protecting private entities than student borrowers, I think is pretty sad.
Well, let's get some calls in here quickly if we can. Nancy's calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. You're on the air, Nancy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You guys are scaring me. We have our loans with Navient, and Navient told us that how do we make sure that we are in this program? My husband's loans, he works for the public library system, and we were told that this was the way it works is that you pay for 10 years, then you apply. And they also set our payments very high, And for years, we've been begging, please, please, these are too high. It's taking up all the money we have. It's a lot more money than he doesn't make more money because of the degree he got. This costs more money than the salary increase for the degree he got. So the problem is, if we don't pay these things off before we retire, we can't retire. Huh. And I'm worried now.
Nancy, thank you so much for your call. Adam, let me just turn it back to you quickly, because it's so complicated. I'm just really trying to find out sort of where the edge of the problem and the solution sort of meet each other. Because I hear what Nancy's saying. Mm-hmm. We talked about this a couple of minutes ago, that you pay for 10 years and only then you might find out whether or not you qualify for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. But on the flip side to that, though, you have been paying for 10 years, mm-hmm. right? I mean, even if it's interest only, those are the terms of your loan.
Sure.
So what's the problem there? If you don't qualify, you don't get the forgiveness. I get it. That's a big deal. But it's not as if you haven't been paying down your loan during that time.
Correct. Right. Well, so there are about a dozen different federal loan repayment plans, and some are 20, 25, or even 30 years long before the loan actually gets paid. And under some of those plans, you can actually be paying more than you would be under the plans that qualify for public service loan forgiveness, which are largely income driven. And so you have these situations where you have people that have been paying not only as they should under the plan that they were told is the right plan for them. They're paying more than they would under the plan that would actually qualify, and they don't know until it's too late. The government actually passed a fix to this problem, which is you're on the wrong plan. And that was so complicated that I don't even know if anyone's going to benefit from that particular fix.
Ah, okay. Well, let's go to Amy, who's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air, Amy.
Hi there. My family is really on tenterhooks about this program. My husband joined the loan repayment program in 2007, so he was one of the first. I think it was second or third month, and he has spent 10 years in public service and is now qualified to have his loans forgiven. It turns out he's paid most of the loan, so we're not getting a huge – it's not a boondoggle for us to be in this program, but it has really – changed the course of our family's life and the opportunities that and the kinds of jobs he's been able to do. So he went from working at a white shoe law firm, felt very called to be an attorney in poverty reduction programs, and was able to do that because we felt like his loan repayments would be lower based on his lower income. So we have served our 10 years, and he is going to continue to do anti-poverty work as an attorney. But we are now in this very fuzzy period where they look to see whether these 10 years have been well spent. He's been an attorney for the federal government for legal services, and we live in fear that someone in this administration is going to decide that this program doesn't work, shouldn't be around. And even though we have kept our end of the bargain and done good work, there's no way that we could have afforded to do public interest work, uh-huh. he would still be a corporate attorney if this program didn't exist. And it feels like a deal. It feels like people are making promises they can't keep and don't care to keep.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for your call there. I mean, Ryan Lieventhal, let me turn back to you here for a second, because, I mean, Amy, her husband, it sounds like, is one of the, almost 900,000 people who have tried to apply to be in the public service loan forgiveness program, because I'm seeing here that the Department of Ed says fewer than 1,000 will be forgiven by the end of this fiscal year. Is that right?
I believe that's right. Yeah.
There's a lot of uncertainty out there, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yes. So because of the fact that, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that the number is so low. One of them is that there were not very many, there was basically only one repayment plan available to people when the program first started in 2007. So not a lot of people were already eligible. They had to proactively get into it. People didn't know that it existed. They didn't know what they had to do. So it took a long time for people to kind of figure this out. And then until 2012, there was no way to know. There was no way to track anyone. There was, you just had this kind of vast number of people who could be qualified, but who knew? And so that 900,000 number refers to the number of people who have submitted an employment certification form, which is that form that tells you if your employment qualifies, and had at least 1 month certified. So that's just basically the number right now who are kind of seemingly on track as far as the Department of Education knows.
Adam Minsky, we just got 40 seconds here to go before the break. But I do want to ask you a question because, I mean, before direct loans came along, I mean, there were a lot of private lenders. There still are for certain things. But you heard the caller earlier saying that, like, he feels private lenders are predatory. But beforehand, the federal government was subsidizing their risk. Right, they were subsidizing the bank's risk for these student loans, and now they're subsidizing perhaps these students themselves directly. I mean, is this demonstrably worse than what we had before?
I think it's just as bad, but a different flavor of bad. To be honest, there are possibly better outcomes here, but the path to those better outcomes obviously is fraught with stress and anxiety.
All right, well, we'll come back and talk more about that. Adam Minsky is joining us. He's a lawyer practicing in Massachusetts and New York, helping student loan borrowers. Also with us is Ryan Lieventhal, writer, freelance writer and editor. She's got a big story in Mother Jones about public service loan forgiveness. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program and problems and confusion that people have had in trying to apply for this interesting government program that would forgive the federal student loan debt of borrowers after 10 years of constant payment if they qualify by being in certain jobs that are for the public good. And there's everything is in that if. I'm joined today by Ryan Lieventhal. She's written about this for Mother Jones. And by Adam Minsky. He's a lawyer who practices in Massachusetts and New York and helps out student loan borrowers and their families. And I want to bring in another voice here. Matthew Sessa joins us today from Philadelphia. He's Executive Director of Student Registration and Financial Services at the University of Pennsylvania. He has served both as Deputy and Acting Chief Operating Officer and the Office of Federal Student Aid in the U.S. Department of Education, so at the Office of Federal Student Aid, I should say. And he was with Fed Loan Servicing when it was created back in 2009. But again, now he's at the University of Pennsylvania. Matthew Sessa, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you joining us today because obviously there's been a lot of criticism heaped on Fed Loan here. And you were there at the creation of Fed Loan. Again, it's an arm of the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency. But I'm just wondering what some of your thoughts and responses are. Are the problems that people are facing now with how Fed Loan is servicing this program?
Well, I agree with a lot of what the guests have said regarding the program and the complexity of the program. As stated, you have to be on the right loan program. And prior to the direct loan program being 100% of the student loan originations, there was a program called the Federal Family Education Loan Program, or FFELP program. And during that transition from 2010, when things went to 100% direct lending, there were a lot of borrowers who had both types of loans. So they had residual FFELP loans and then direct loans as well. And so not completely understanding that the forgiveness program was for direct loans did cause a lot of confusion and issues. And one thing that I didn't hear mentioned, there's a few more pieces of complexity that I think are worth bringing up. If folks were in that situation where they had both FFELP loans and direct loans, they could have their FFELP loans qualify by consolidating them into direct loans, but in doing that, they needed to be very careful that if they were already making payments on their direct loan, they didn't consolidate that along with the FFELP loans, because that would restart the payment clock on their direct loan. So they had to be counseled very, very carefully that if they were going to do that consolidation, it was to do their FFELP loans separate from their direct loan. So I know that had been a point of confusion when I was involved back in the inception. And then the other things that I didn't hear mentioned is income-driven repayment plans, the family of income-driven repayment plans, are also quite complex to apply for and require the borrower to resubmit an application and recertify their income every year. And if that is done late or they don't receive the communication that it's time to do that, the payments revert to a higher payment amount, monthly payment amount, and that's very problematic for the borrower and will ultimately affect their forgiveness. So I know one of the things the department and the IRS had at least generally agreed to was to work on creating a multi-year income certification. Mm-hmm. That borrowers wouldn't have to do that each and every year, and at least reduce the complexity on staying on those low installment amounts.
Well, so Matthew Sessa, I mean, all of us here in this conversation today have used the word complex a multiplicity of times because it is, right? I'm just curious. I'm just trying to understand. I mean, is a company like FedLoan? You're not with them now, but you were there when it was created in 2009. I mean. We've been hearing that borrowers are saying that they've been misled by servicers on what plan they're on and how to make payments. And we've heard earlier in the hour that you don't even know if you qualify for loan forgiveness until after 10 years. I'm just curious, is FedLoan itself as an organization even qualified to be a servicer for something like this if it is so complex?
Well, I can't speak directly to that, but I can say when the department expanded its servicing footprint. Traditionally, they had used one servicer up to 2010. I think Ryan mentioned when things went to 100% direct lending, they needed to increase their capacity to be able to service significantly more volume. And in doing that, they had a short time to do that, as well as their contract, I believe, was running out with the former servicer. I think they made the decision to work with organizations that already had student loan servicing experience and already had student loan infrastructure in place.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, there were only a handful of servicers out there that had the experience to do what the department needed
right.
them to do
well,
in a short period of time.
Let me just jump in here really quickly because earlier in the hour we talked about Lee McIlvain. She's featured in Ryan Liebenthal's report, and I also spoke with her this weekend. She's got some $70,000 of in loans and thinks she's part of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. And you were talking about other servicers here. Lee pointed this out, too, that for a while she was working directly with the federal government on servicing her loans. Then, and that wasn't too bad, but then she explains what happened next.
Then my loans kind of were sold into the stream of commerce, and I just received notification that I was being serviced by a company called Mohila, which I think was smaller, and honestly, I felt like the people that I talked to there actually knew what they were talking about. And then one year I submitted my employment certification, and that triggered my loans to be transferred over to FedLoan Servicing, and I've had nothing but problems with them since then.
Matthew Sessa, what do you think about that?
I can't speak to her particular situation. I do know that anytime loans transfer from one servicer to another, that can create opportunities for there to be issues as data transfers from one system to another. Although in the case of Mohila, I believe they use FIA's servicing system. They lease FIA's servicing system, so I'm not sure what the particular issues were in the movement from Mohila to FedLoan in her situation. But it is her story is unfortunate.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me get Adam Minsky back in here. Matthew sort of walked us through some of the more complexities. What are you thinking right now?
You know, I think of specific client experiences that my clients have had with regards to some of these points that were just raised. you have to be in an income-driven plan. That's absolutely true. I've had clients who have had to wait 6 months or longer for Fed Loan Servicing to approve and process their income-driven repayment application, and they're forced into a forbearance during that time, which doesn't count. I have had borrowers who never got notice that it was time to renew their income-driven plan, and they were bumped off the plan and then had to go through a months-long process to renew that. I have had borrowers it was brought up that you have to have a direct loan, and FFELP loans can be consolidated to convert those loans into a direct loan. I have had other servicers, not Fed Loan, but the Navients and the other servicers that service the federal loan system, tell borrowers point blank that you have the right type of loan. You don't need to consolidate, which actually was incorrect, and borrowers have lost years of progress. At every stage of the process, borrowers are done a disservice by the system.
Can it be simplified in any way?
Yes. I think to simplify the program itself would require an act of Congress because the law as written has these complex requirements. So that would require an act of Congress. Can the system be simplified? I think that's a more complicated question. The Department of Ed certainly doesn't have the capacity to handle this internally. So how do we create a more efficient and consumer-oriented servicing system? You know, that's going to take a lot of input.
Well, doesn't this get us to the question of whether or not the federal government should be in this business at all?
It does, yeah. And I don't know the answer to that. What I can tell you is that, there are also purely private student loans that have nothing to do with the federal loan system. And we see a lot of similar problems with private loan servicers as well. So, I don't know what the solution is, but I think, part of the answer has to be a robust oversight authority, whether that's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau or a division within the Department of Ed. These servicing companies need to be held accountable for their actions. And I think that has to be part of the conversation.
All right. Let's take a couple calls here. Michelle is calling from Dracut, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Okay. I've been in the forbearance program for 3 years. And the one thing I'd like to say is you have to send a new form every year from your employer. And it was very easy for me to get in. My form said you have to work for a town, city, or
Michelle, I'm so sorry to have to do this, but the quality of your phone line is really rough. But I think you heard you saying that it was easy for you to get into the program, maybe that you just filled out a form and it all worked out. So I'm glad to hear that, Michelle. Sorry I had to cut you off there, but the phone lines just aren't cooperating with us today. Let's go to Kate, who's calling from Oklahoma City. You're on the air, Kate.
Hi, Magna. Thank you so much for taking my call. Everything you guys are discussing is exactly what I'm going through. I mean, I've been through so much. I feel traumatized and distressed by this. I've had every single thing you've mentioned, from trying to consolidate certain loans that didn't qualify to being told that my type of payment plan that I was on expired. Through doing that, $40,000 worth of interest capitalized. I am now over $200,000 in debt. I can't buy a house because of the debt-to-income ratio. They have to consider my whole $200,000 as a payment that I'm making. It has been an utter nightmare. My servicer has no clue what they're talking about. I get a different answer every single time I call. This has probably been one of the most frustrating experiences of my entire life.
Wow. Kate, thank you so much for your call. Ryan Lieventhal, you've been really patient with us here. What's your thought as to what Kate said?
That's a story that I've heard, that phrase, I get a different answer every time I call. I've said that myself because I've had some of these experiences. I've heard that from essentially everyone I've talked to, and I think that speaks to one of the major issues with this, where the people who are supposed to be more informed than you don't really know how to help you. And so you just feel like you're flailing and you don't know what to do. And it's a very, very frustrating and demoralizing situation.
Yeah.
I wanted to respond to one thing, which is how, whether the government should be involved in this at all. And I think one thing that people mention to me a lot is none of this program or the federal loan program generally really addresses one big issue, that is the tuition. It's just exorbitant at this point, and people can't really afford to pay it. And so until we get tuition under control, I think the loan program is going to remain this problem for society.
But, I mean, some of the people who push back most strongly against the federal government being in the student loan business or even specifically around programs like the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program is that for as long as that federal money is there, tuitions are going to go up, right?
Right.
And it's like this seemingly this unlimited pot of money that students are told, you know, take on this debt because it's good for your future. So the way to get a hold of tuition rates might be to reduce the spigot of cash.
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult problem to solve. And I think one of the issues I have is that increasingly, I think the political rhetoric punishes the individual borrower, that they have made an irresponsible choice. And it just seems like that's the last person who should be, ostracized or punished by
this. Well, Adam Minsky, what do you think about this? That, like, some critics do say that the public loans, public service loan forgiveness program, for example, is, you know, in the words of someone from the American Enterprise Institute, it's a moral hazard, right? It creates a moral hazard. It makes people take on a lot of debt for jobs that would never cover the cost of that debt, or even that it helps subsidize graduate schools who are charging $80,000 for certain degrees.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so absolutely, I think that the cost of higher education has to be part of the conversation. There are multiple factors that have created what I think is a crisis right now, and certainly, the rapid increases in the cost of higher education is a factor. That being said, at the end of the day, we need good people to do these types of jobs. Some of these types of jobs are constitutionally mandated, like public defenders. We need good people doing those jobs. And here in Massachusetts, public defenders start off with a starting salary of around $40,000. Cost of law school education is $150,000 to $200,000. So, you know, we need to reduce the cost of that, but we also need to make sure that people have the ability to get the education so that they can get those jobs as well. And I think that's what this program was originally designed to do. I think that all elements of this system, both the availability of loans to fund this, but also the cost of the education itself, both sides of that have to be addressed.
And we should note that the program began under the administration of George W. Bush,
that's
right?
Correct.
And
yes.
Then President Obama sort of added a little bit created a similar plan or added to the existing
one. Yeah. So this was under George W. Bush, and then the Obama administration added some additional repayment plan options, which you could argue either made it better or worse. But yeah, this was a Republican and a bipartisan plan.
Matthew Sessa, we've just got a couple seconds left to go here. For all the people listening, I mean, this is something that's having an impact on millions, perhaps. I mean, what would be your advice to them on how to navigate the system and better deal with it?
The first thing is absolutely complete the employee certification form. That is an optional form. The only way to know for sure if your employer is qualified and if the payments you made are qualifying is to complete that form. To wait 10 years to find out that you don't qualify because of a rule or regulation you weren't aware of, I can imagine is beyond frustrating. So I would encourage folks to do that. And then, if you have questions, you know, push back. If you believe you've made a qualifying payment that your servicer is telling you isn't qualifying, make them explain it to you in plain language.
Yeah. Well, Matthew Sessa, Executive Director of Student Registration and Financial Services at the University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Adam Minsky, a lawyer practicing in Massachusetts and New York, helping student loan borrowers and their families. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Ryan Liebenthal, freelance writer and editor. Her big news story in Mother Jones is Unforgivable. Why is the nation's flagship debt forgiveness program failing the students it's supposed to help? We've got a link to it at onpointradio.org. Ryan, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And folks, keep your comments coming at our website, onpointradio.org. There's a lot there, and we want to keep the conversation going. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.